last closing chapter, and some very, very important final remarks, final teaching that the apostle is making to the church that he's writing to, a church he's been greatly concerned about, and seeking to encourage. So here's somebody who is concerned about a church and he wants to see them encouraged. And we've been, I trust, encouraged as we've been hearing his message relayed to us as well. We're talking about the whole armor of God. That's the main substance of the reading. I just want to look at the three verses at the beginning of this passage, verses 10, 11, 12, and 13, those opening verses. And I want to talk about light for dark days, light for dark days, because as we're going to look at in this passage this morning, you'll see that he's speaking about dark days for the gospel. And it's clear, I think the first thing I want to really relay to you is that these dark days can get you down, life can get you down, people can get discouraged. And here's some good news, God will lift you up. God will lift you up. Life can get you down, but God will lift you up. And as we move in, because I'm going to be spending a bit of time in the armor of God, looking at some of the aspects of the armor of God, there's something here that I don't think it's actually explicitly spelt out. But in the modern infantryman's armor now, they have these night vision facilities on their helmets, which enables them to go into situations and fight at night and see what otherwise is cloaked in darkness. And as we read this passage this morning, we can see that Paul is able to see by the eyes of the Spirit what is going on in the Spirit, in the dark. He can see in the dark. And if you will trust God, he will show you things that are happening in this dark world. You'll see the things that other people can't see. There's a night vision capability that the gospel gives us if we'll trust God and put on the armor. So I hope you've got the passage in front of you. We're concentrating on verses 10 through to 13. Let me just pray, and then I want to open up this passage a bit. I'm grateful, Father, for this opportunity to open your word with your people and to, by your Spirit's mighty work and energy, by the word, to see your people built up and taught and helped and encouraged. I pray that the gathering here today would be more equipped and reminded of their ability to see the real issues and to concentrate on the real issues, on the real struggle, on the real fight, and they wouldn't be deceived. Give us a vision, Lord, in this dark world. Help us to see in this dark world. We're reminded how the apostle prayed for the church, that their eyes might be enlightened. Enlighten us. Enlighten us, we pray. Help me to speak and each one to listen. We need your help, Lord. The devil roams around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. He will steal the word. He will snatch the word. Defend us. Defend us, O God, we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. True to say, here in this country, we like to talk about the weather. It's a well-noted fact that we are interested in the weather, and we'll talk about it without too much prompting. We are a meteorologist nation, fascinated by the weather. It's changing all the time, isn't it? It changes all the time. The seasons change all the time. And so we're having to be quick on our feet, aren't we, to respond to the changing conditions all the time. But have you noticed that the weather is not just a British obsession? More and more so, I think the climate and the changes in the climate are becoming a global conversation. We're infectious. And it seems that the world is beginning to talk about the changes in the weather, the changes in the climate, because people are noticing, as we often notice in this country, the freakishness of certain weather phenomena. people come to expect certain things to happen in certain seasons. They expect a season of rain, and then it's just sunny all the way through. They expect to see open, clear skies, and it's heavy and cloudy for weeks on weeks. They reasonably expect that, oh, this time of the year it will snow. The snow doesn't show. And so on, and people are caught up in the surprising transformations and changes all around them, droughts, and so on and so forth. Why is it all going on? People are troubled. It troubles people. Weather's very important, isn't it? It's very, very important. It occupies people's minds. Very strange. I want to sort of focus on sort of the freakishness of it in a way. Do you remember the eclipse of the sun that we had not so long ago? Do you remember that? Such a freakish thing, wasn't it? Every day we expect the sun to rise up in the sky, and throughout the course of the day it's going to be light. That's what happens, right? We expect light during the day. And then suddenly this kind of shadow crept over the sun, and the whole world started to go dark. And do you remember the other thing that went with it? It started to get cold. Do you remember? Suddenly it was cold. And this wasn't supposed to be happening right now. This is so out of its season, out of place. And the other thing I noticed was what happens at night is that the birds stop singing, don't they? And they were all confused because the moon was moving across the face of the sun, and all the birds thought, oh, time for bed. And they stopped singing. And then they all had to start again a few minutes later or whatever when it started again. Everything was seemingly disordered. It's like a sign, like it seems so disordered. The world is a bit topsy-turvy. It's not as it should be. The moon at night, do you remember we've seen various lunar eclipses as well, and the sun just turns that strange red color. The moon turns to blood sort of thing. What's going on up in the heavens? And it grows dim, and the eclipse, the sun gets darkness, and things just are seemingly out of order. Scientists will give us a very clear and rational explanation for all of these things, which is very encouraging, but it still feels wrong, doesn't it? Even if you understand, it still feels strange, it feels wrong. Here in the passage we're looking at, Paul uses a couple of expressions here, which sort of describe this uneasy, unnatural state of affairs. He talks about dark days. If you look down in the passage in the opening verses there, you'll see he talks about this present darkness. Can you see that? This present darkness in verse 12, towards the end of verse 12. This present darkness. Well, if it was nighttime, that wouldn't be a particularly strange thing to say. It is dark, it's dead. But then you go on, and he says in verse 13 towards the end, this, the evil day. Do you see? He links the evil day with a present darkness. He's talking about darkness, but the strange thing is, the darkness is not at night. It's in the midst of the day. How strange to find what should, a day should be a time of light and life, but actually, it's a time of darkness, and he talks about evil, doesn't he? He talks about evil. In the daytime, there's something very disordered going on that he's pointing them out to. Do you remember from the first Iraq war, those photographs that came from the... Do you remember all the oil fields on fire? Do you remember those photographs of the oil fields on fire? The world was so disordered. Everything was so disordered. The smoke billowing up into the sky. And it was like night. The smoke just blacked out the sun. It was just like it was in the middle of the day, in the middle of the desert. Everything should be bright. And instead, it's just darkness. A dark day. Paul is talking here about dark days. A present darkness. The evil day. A world turned upside down. A world in crisis. He's saying there's a crisis going on. Everything is out of order. Let's step back for a minute and just think about the writer. Here's the Apostle Paul. Where was the Apostle Paul when he wrote this letter? He was in prison. He's a man in prison. He's been shut away. When you're in prison, you get shut away from the light of day, don't you? You get shut out from the light, and your days are turned into night, aren't they? You're thrown in a dungeon. Your days are turned into night. So you can sort of understand why he would think, you know, from day in, each day that passes, sitting there in the dark dungeon, his days have been turned into night. And maybe you've been there, maybe you've had experiences like that, where you feel that you've been shut out from the ordinary run of life, that the world is all carrying on outside somewhere, and you're stuck in, you're locked away. Sometimes it's just because you're sitting at your office and the sun is shining on a beautiful day and you can think of, can almost imagine in your mind everybody playing down at the beach and playing with a beach ball, and there you are, slaving away. You can't leave, you can't move, you're stuck, he's shut away. It's like somehow life has been eclipsed. Your life has been eclipsed. Other people might be enjoying life, other people might be free, but you're not you. You are having a dark day. In the cartoons, they have the rain cloud, don't they? Over the person's head. You know, everybody's walking around fine, and then there's this one person, they've got this black cloud and rain coming down just on their head. They're having this dark day, the dark day. It's daytime, but for you, it's dark. Things are not as they should be. Why is this man in prison? You see, it would be perfectly right and normal if he had committed some terrible crime to find this man in prison, wouldn't it? That would be appropriate. What has he done? This man has been preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ. I don't know what you think is the very best thing you could do with your life. The greatest use of your strength and your energy, the greatest benefit or service. We've been thinking about a life of service, haven't we? The Queen speaks about Christ giving inspiration to a life of service. What is the greatest service you can render to yourself, to your family, to your society and your community? What's the best thing that you could do with your life? You can tell them about Jesus Christ. You can tell them about what he has done on the cross. You can tell them about sins forgiven and a new start. You can tell them about the filling of the Spirit. You can tell them about the fellowship of the church, of the saints. You can tell them about the hope to come. We can tell them about heaven. Listen to that word. Just think what that word means. Heaven. You can tell them about escape from hell. You can tell them the good news about Jesus Christ. And this man has been spending his energies, telling people the good news about Jesus Christ. The blessing of God, the love of God, the forgiveness of sins. And for his reward, they stuck him in jail. That is a world turned upside down, isn't it? When the good that you would do is spoken of and treated as evil, that is a dark day. When good is called evil and evil is called good, that is a dark day, isn't it? And that's the sort of day that the apostle is living in, and he's experiencing it in his own life. What a crazy world. What a crazy world if the fireman on the way to the fire is arrested by the police and put in prison for trying to put out the fire. That is a mad world. That's a world turned upside down. Paul has been put in prison for preaching Jesus Christ and him crucified for the gospel. He's in prison for the gospel. It's like people have lost their minds. It's like reason has been eclipsed. If the light of reason is shining, as if something has gone in front of the light and everybody has just been plunged into the darkness, they've gone mad. Now the courts and the officials and the magistrates and all the people who are supposed to be there to promote the good, to promote what is wholesome and right, to promote life and liberty, have now been used and turned to actually shut down and prevent the very thing which they are there to accomplish and achieve. There's something deeply wrong going on in the world at this time. This is a dark day. It's a dark day. So when the world's disordered, when things are out of order and out of place, when the weather's gone up the spout and the politics has gone insane and the country's falling apart at the seams and people aren't doing what they should be doing and they love the lie instead of the truth, what effect does that have on you? Tell me whether it kind of wears away at you a little bit. Whether sometimes it just gets under your skin. Whether in truth it might even start to get you down. In truth, could it even get you depressed? Could you get to a place where it breaks your spirit? And you get discouraged. And your strong hands start to fall down and think, oh, there's nothing I can do. And I'm stuck here. And it's just the way it is. And you become resigned to the whole problem. That happens, doesn't it? And we can become those people who just complain and say, oh, what a terrible world. And whoever this God is out there who's allowed all these sort of things, I don't know where he is. And somebody walked up to me the other day. They know I'm a minister. And they walked up to me. I went to get my car fixed. And I went into the garage. And the man in the garage said to me, the first thing he said to me was, God is dead, he said to me. This world, he's absented himself. He's given up on a lot of us, he said. Everybody's gone mad. Everybody's gone mad. The world's gone upside down. I said, well, I'm not as pessimistic as you. I know Jesus Christ. It was a good conversation starter. He did fix my car. He didn't charge me, bless him. So there you go. Can't be bad. Darkness, the darkness that's in the world, the darkness can get in your soul. It can fill your soul. Until you are part of a darkness. And without meaning to, whatever, out of your life, you are actually promoting darkness and extending the darkness through your life. You become part of that dark day. You become part of the dark day. Well, all sorts of stuff happens in the dark, doesn't it? When people do their worst things in the dark, don't they? People are ashamed of the things that they do, and they don't ashamed to do them in the light. Although maybe sometimes if you had a few beers inside you, you'll do them in the broad daylight as well, as we've witnessed quite palpably recently. People will do all sorts of things in the darkness that you wouldn't normally do in the broad daylight. Wouldn't it be great if eating carrots worked? Wouldn't it be great? And we could see in the dark. We could see in the dark. What is going on? What is going on? We need night vision. We need night vision. Paul's in prison. The churches he's writing to, the church of the Ephesians, they were started so well. They're born again. The Spirit was given to them. They heard the gospel. Now look at them. Now look at the way they're living their lives. Some of them are practicing doing things that, you know, they're just no different from everybody else. All that work, they've all backslidden. He's in prison. It's enough to get you down. What a dark day. It's just like, if you ever found yourself asking the question, where is the Lord? Where is the Lord in this? It's like the Son of Christ has been eclipsed. Something has just stepped in front of the sun, the bright light of Jesus Christ in your life. And there's just confusion and clouds and so on. Like poor old Job. You were telling us about Job on Sunday night, weren't you? And perhaps some of you have read the book of Job. Prosperous man, good man, righteous man. Everything went wrong. Everything went wrong. His whole world turned upside down. I'm telling you, Satan was walking abroad. Walking in the darkness. Stalking God's people. Scheming against God's people. And Poor Job, you know, he had his enemies against him. And bless him, he had his friends against him too. You know, sometimes you turn to your friends, they'll help me. And they can't help you. They can't help you. It's a dark day. It's a dark day. Poor Job, the weather had seemed to turn against him. His health, his own physical body seemed to be collapsing underneath him. His family situation was a source of profound sadness and grief. All the things that should be in their place, everything had gone out of place. This was a dark day, and he needed to see what really was going on. Because I'll tell you what will happen to you if you don't find out what's going on. You're going to get down, you're going to get depressed, you're going to get angry at the world, and you're going to get bitter against God. You're going to get bitter against God. So look, there's my first point. It's the non-light and breezy point, as I hope I've made clear. Life can get you down. That's just a fact, isn't it? That's just a fact. So, moving on, I want you to notice what the Apostle Paul says to people in the dark days. Put on the whole armor of God. Get dressed. Put it on. And as we read down the passage, he doesn't just say it at once. He says, put on the whole armor there in verse 11. And as we keep reading down verse 12 and therefore gets down to verse 13, he says it again. Take up the whole armor of God. There is something we must do. There is something we must do. He's not just saying it once, is he? He's saying it to them twice. Sometimes, do you always get it the first time? Do you find you always get it the first time? It's interesting how often we need to be told again and again and again. What is it with us? We're sort of so dismissive, aren't we? We sort of like walk on by, oh, we can't have meant it the first time. I'll just keep going, you know. No, put it, take it up. Take it up. You have to do something. Put on the full armor of God. What's God saying? What's God saying? He's hammering this point home. Why is it so important that you do this? Because, in short, you are weak. You are weak and you will be destroyed. The world will destroy you. You will lose your soul. You will. You will. But there's something you can do. There's something you must do. You have to put on the full armor of God. And we people say, well, putting on armor. What a bit of a fuss. I don't like to make a fuss. If I put on armor, that's all kind of fighting talk, isn't it? Fighting talk. I don't like fighting. I don't want to fight. I'm a peaceful person. Just let me carry on in my peaceful, ordinary way. I'll be okay. I have my own ways of dealing with problems. I've got my own strategy. I'll live off my wits. I've got my own strength. I'll be fine. It's pride. And it's folly. It's folly. You say you don't want to fight. You say you don't want to fight. But there is one who will fight against you whether you want it or not. You've got to first want to win. You will not put on the armor until you realize that not only are you losing, but that you cannot win. You cannot win. Just think about life. Who gets out of life alive? Have you ever seen anybody get out of life alive? You will lose. He will get you. Put on the armor. Put on the armor. And you only start to get interested in this armor. Oh, what is this armor? Well, okay, maybe I will have a look at it. When you suddenly realize that you are losing, you are failing, you will be destroyed, and there is nothing you can do about it in yourself. But the armor, we read here, be strong in the Lord and the strength of His might. His might. There is something that He will do for you if you will trust Him. And amongst other things, I want to show. It gives you a night vision. What do we have to do? Once we've got in this armor, once the armor is on, what are you able to do? There are three things that this passage tells us you'll be able to do if you are wearing this armor that you will not be able to do if you're not. And the first thing is you will be able to stand. Verse 11, you will be able to stand. Make your stand. Stop being pushed around. Stop being defeated and pushed around from pillar to post. Stop being the victim in the situation. Stop being driven like a herd. You don't be driven anymore. You will stand. That's the one thing you'll be able to do if you put this armor on. You'll be able to stand. I love this psalm. Psalm 134. Come, bless the Lord, all you servants of the Lord, who stand by night in the house of the Lord. Lift up your hands to the holy place and bless the Lord. May the Lord bless you from Zion, he who made the heavens and the earth. You see, you're not the first generation of people who had to stand in the night and bless God. And praise God, even in the middle of the darkest day, find the strength to stand and give your praise and your worship to the living God. Once you're standing, you've stopped running away. Anybody here ever run away? You stop retreating. You stop giving up ground. You stop going backwards. You stop hiding. You come out into the open with your armor on and you are ready to fight. You're ready to fight. You're ready to take it on. You've taken your place. You've claimed your ground. You've planted your flag. Here I am. Here I am. It's good. It's good to stand. You are made by God to stand. And he will help you. He will help you. And what's interesting, this letter, you know, talks about the dark days. It's not just been written to one person. This wasn't a letter written to Paul in prison. This was a letter written by Paul in prison. In prison, he puts on this armor himself. And as he stands, he's then able to call all the other Christians. Call all of them to do the same thing, to stand, to turn up for battle. You know, in the army, you get a bugle, don't you? They still do it, I think, in certain circumstances. It's more ceremonial than anything nowadays. Somebody blows the trumpet, and everybody jumps out of bed, sticks on their kit, and shows up in the field. That's what he's saying we've got to do. You've got to show up, not for a parade, not for an inspection, a show of strength, not of our numbers. What is our strength? God. God is our strength. That's the message. That's the message. And it's not just to stand, is it? As you go on there, we read a little bit further down, verse 12, we're not just called to stand, we are to wrestle. It's not the Olympic sport. It's not a little gold prize. This is contending in the battle for victory. Real, substantial victory. To wrestle, to dislodge the enemy from their positions on your ground, on your turf. The people have encroached upon that which God has given you. Push them back. Push them off. State your claim. And, you know, people say, you know, I've heard this about baptism. I don't want to get baptized. Oh, why not? Why don't you want to get baptized? Well, because I've heard that if you get baptized, well, the devil attacks you. So I get, you know, some test or some trial. Yes. This passage tells us not only can we stand and wrestle, we can also withstand as well at the end of the passage. When he pushes you, he will come and he will push you back. You wear this armor and you will still stand. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. If you're wearing the armor, you will stand and stand therefore. You will hold your ground. They may come back. They may come back several times. But with the armor on, you can withstand, this passage tells us. In the dark days, God offers you hope. You don't have to be a victim. You don't have to let the rain fall on your head and on and on and on. God will lift you up. God will protect you if you'll trust him. So thirdly, lastly, and after a quick sip of water, regather yourselves for a moment. His armor has night vision. One of the worst things about the dark is the confusion that goes with it. Something happens in the middle of the night. You're woken up in the middle of the night. Something happens. The confusion is often as dangerous as the actual thing itself, because you don't really know what's going on. And it would be great. We said if we could see in the dark, carrots don't work. But the armor I'm showing you here contains some night vision capability. Think of the Lord Jesus for a moment. Jesus was arrested. The authorities arrested Jesus. They put him in a situation where they blindfolded him and they surrounded him with soldiers. And the soldiers were all around him and they started beating him. Yes, Paul Mallard was talking to me about this the other day. Have you heard him talking to you about it, Catherine? No? Oh, okay. So Paul Mallard was talking to us about this as well, wasn't he? Do you remember, Sean? He was reminding us about Jesus on trial with a blindfold on. He couldn't see. What were they doing? As they started to punch him, didn't they? They started to punch Jesus. Punch him in the face. And saying, who hit you? Go on, you're a prophet. In the dark, total darkness. You're a prophet. You should be able to see what's going on. Do you think Jesus knows who his enemy is as the punches rain down on him? Do you think he knows who it is that's punching him? Who his enemy is? Who's attacking him? Who's attacking? Who is it? Who is it? It's here in the passage. It's the devil, isn't it? It's the devil who hates Jesus Christ. The devil hates Jesus Christ. And Jesus didn't have to say, oh, it's Paulinus Severitus or whatever his name was or whatever it is. Because he knows who the enemy is. He knows who his enemy is. He can see him plain. He doesn't need to have his eyes unclosed to see who the enemy is. And we shouldn't be so foolish to not think that we can see who the enemy is too. And right here in this passage, we are told absolutely categorically who the enemy is. Verse 11, put on the whole armor of God that you may stand and be able to stand against the schemes of the... It's the devil. That's who it is. That's who it is. And that's who he tells the Ephesians is sowing discord and immorality and discouragement in the church. That's who it is that slammed him in prison for preaching Christ. That's who's behind all of these things. It's the devil's schemes. The devil's schemes. That's who we're up against. And Jesus can see. And Paul can see. Can you see who your enemy is? And if you can see him, what are you going to do? Are you going to fight him without your armor? Are you going to go out there and deal with the devil? Anybody here like to volunteer to single-handedly, without the armor of God, go and take on the devil and overcome him? I'm telling you, if you try, you are doomed. You are utterly doomed. You have no idea what you're talking about or what you're taking on. There's only one greater. And by the grace of God, he is your father. He is able. He is able. But none of us. None of us. So put on your father's armor. Put it on and take your stand. Take your stand. Wrestle. Withstand. with your father's armor on. Oh, well, I think I'll just leave him alone. That's the best way to deal with the devil. I just leave him alone. If I'll leave him alone, he'll leave me alone. No, he won't. I'll make a pact with him. He will break it. He will break it. You need God. You need God more than you know you need. You need God. You need his armor on. Jesus, we read about in the book of Revelation, just very briefly, Jesus at the end will slay him. He will. He'll slay him with the word of his mouth, and that'll be the end of it. But in the meantime, we are still in this battle. We are in this battle. You are going to meet in this life all the forces, the cosmic powers, it says here, his armies, the cosmic powers, the evil forces that he has deployed into this world, is there in verse 12. And they're all under his command. They're executing his will. They're doing his, fulfilling his schemes. And at times, they just literally, their numbers and size just blot out the light. Yes, I was writing this, and I was thinking to myself, I know what's going to be happening. I'm going to be saying all this stuff. And we're going to be sitting in this room in North Bradley, and the sun may or may not be shining, you know, doing the stuff it normally does. And we've got our dinner on at home, and life's all right, really, isn't it? It's pretty good. And the question might pop into somebody's mind, you know, it's all well and good getting very excited about all of this, Ben, but, you know, if you look around, everything's basically all right. What, aren't you getting a little bit excited about all of this, this kind of this great battle and all this sort of thing? Well, you know, is this a little bit over the top? But if you could see, I don't think you'd be saying that. If the eyes of your understanding were enlightened, I don't think you'd be thinking like that at all. You see, this church was undergoing a lot of persecution, wasn't it? It's going a lot of persecution. You're not being persecuted, are you, particularly? Our very queen is a professing Christian. Okay? You go to the law courts, you swear on the Bible. Whatever complaints we might have about this country, and there, I'm sure we do have many complaints to make, there is an extraordinary liberty for Christians here in this country. We can set up a church, we can preach the gospel, we can speak our minds, we can evangelize. And actually, at the moment, you can go anywhere in Europe and do that. You can go anywhere in Europe as a Christian, as a practicing Christian, start a church and do evangelism. There is nothing any law can do to stop you. Right? There is Christian liberty in for us as British citizens at this particular time. Rejoice. Rejoice. Okay? That was not true for them. And there are Christians at this time for whom these things are not true, not even time. They have to struggle for every single freedom and opportunity which we are handed on a plate. And the devil was trying to break the spirit of those Christians by persecution, but you know he has another way of breaking the spirit of Christians, and it's not by persecution, it's by prosperity and comfort. And by ease. The Proverbs say, a little folding of the hands, a little folding of the feet, and a little sleep, so your enemy will come upon you in the dark. We can just slip away, and our zeal and our evangelism and our praying and our witness, what happens? We've got it all and we do nothing with it. Who's behind that? Who's trying to shut down the church? Who's trying to silence the gospel by whatever means he can deploy? It's your enemy. It's your enemy. And not just yours. It's the enemy of all those souls who so near to hear the good news about Jesus. We love talking about the weather. We love talking about the weather. And we love looking at our weather forecasts. We look up at the clouds. What's the spiritual climate like? Tell me. What's the spiritual climate like? So that is a rhetorical question. I know I do that sometimes. What is the climate like? And what is the forecast? What direction do you see this as going? Do you see the advance of the gospel? Do you see greater liberty and freedom and zeal for Christ? Do you see people being saved more and more as each day approaches? Do you see that? What's the spiritual direction? Do you think the light is coming in or the light is going out? But whatever's going on, what do you need to do? You need to put on the armor of God and make your stand. Yes? Not just because you're being persecuted. This is not a word to the persecuted church. It's a word to you. It's a word to me. It's a word today. The devil just kind of has this capacity to hide inside the machine. Why is Paul in prison? Because the devil has used the system at that present time to orchestrate it in that way to bring about his ends. But don't be fooled by what's going on. You have to make your stand. Every single generation, every single Christian in the world is being tested and tempted and tried at this very moment. It's the nature of the fight. It's the nature of the call. There is a spiritual battle raging even as we speak. And either you're going to do, which Job started to do at the first passage, lash out at his friends and lash out at God, flailing around, thinking that this is coming from the world and from the flesh and blaming this person and this government and that government and this and all. It's the devil, friends. Our battle is not against flesh and blood. It's a spiritual battle. And we have to make our spirituals stand. Nearly done. Remember Jacob on his way back to Canaan, to the promised land? That was his land, wasn't it? It was his land. And as he's on his way back, he meets this spiritual being, doesn't he? And the spiritual being doesn't just say, oh, welcome back to Canaan and to your property. He fights him. Fights him and resists him, and I'm telling you, if Jacob had stopped and quit and let go and turned back, he would have never entered the land, right? What did he do? He fought him. And it says at the end, you have prevailed and be victorious. You have fought with God. You have fought with God. I read that, rightly or wrongly, disagree with me if you will. With God, he fought with God's strength. With God's strength, he fought and he hung on to that until the light came, until the darkness passed. And yes, he got injured. And that's the danger, isn't it? You think, I'm not going to fight. I don't want to fight because I might get hurt. I was a bit nervous at school sometimes about getting into fights at school and stuff because I might get hurt. And my mum said, I got such a pretty face. Might get hurt. Jacob got hurt. He got hurt. But he won. What's more important? What's more important? How important is the battle? How important is the victory? How important is the gospel? How important is the worship of God? How important are these things? And are you prepared to take the hit if needs be? Jacob became a prince with God as a result. And Paul saw his day was a battle. Do we see our day as a battle? Do you see the battle? Are you wearing your armor? And if you're not, put it on. Put it on. Take it up. Don't be shy. Put it on.
just by closing remarks, I just want you to reflect. If you get any time to look back over the book of Ephesians, he's saying all these things after talking to them about their marriages, talking about their relationships to their children, their relationship to their parents, their relationship to their colleagues at work, the people they work for, the people who work for them. That's where the battle is. It's out there in everyday ordinary life. Put it on. Put it on. Everybody's waving flags. Flags have come back into fashion. They kind of like went off the boil, didn't they? Didn't go for flags that much, but really back into flags again. People seem to be waving their flags. We've got obviously the Queen's birthday. It's a great occasion for waving flags, isn't it? Lots of flags fluttering around. Very nice. And Euro 2016 is on at the moment. Everybody's out there waving their flags. Lots of flags. The referendum, both sides, all waving their flags. Everybody's waving the flag. And on this flag, on our flag, what is there emblazoned at the center of our flag? It's a cross. It's a cross. Everybody's waving, Royal Britannia, waving the flag, waving this cross around. But tell me, how many of all these flag-waving people waving their crosses around on their flags, how many are waving the Christ of the cross around? How many are lifting up Jesus Christ and him crucified? They wave the symbol, but do they wave the person? Are they proclaiming the message? Are they making as much noise about the gospel of Jesus Christ as they are about whatever else that flag symbolizes and represents? Because we talk about being a Christian country, moot point, discuss at length over a cup of coffee. But I see a lot of people waving flags, and they're drunk, and they're violent, and they're swearing. And I don't see that being a fruit of the Spirit. I don't see that as people putting their spiritual armor on. I don't see that people living for Christ and for the gospel. I don't see that as Christian, not for a minute. Lord, send revival. The people would wave a flag of Jesus Christ, lift up the name of Jesus Christ, and live godly. I'm telling you, there are nations around the world that look at us, and peoples of other faiths around the world that look at us. They think, oh, there's the great Christian country. There's the great Protestant country, Great Britain. And they look at the way people conduct themselves and say, if that is the true faith, I'm going to look into Buddhism or something. Christians, put on your armor. Put on your armor. There is a fight on for the souls of countless thousands and thousands. Isn't there? Let them see Jesus Christ and him crucified in your life. In your life. Fight the good fight. Put on the whole armor of God. We're going to sing something to finish this morning. And